Recording on?
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is going to be an interesting introduction because of the shared votes. But I'm just going to call everyone on this list and then ask anyone who's not on the list to introduce themselves for the recording. Jackson Bowman.
Yes.
David Gonzalez. Paul Harkin.
Here.
Mary Lawrence Hicks. Andrew Lopez.
Yes.
Tracy Packer.
Here.
Chip Sapanich.
Here.
Laura Thomas.
Here.
Channing Celestine is excused. Ken Pierce is absent. Eric Sutter.
Here.
Wade Flores is excused. Kenneth Hornby.
Here.
Charles Cerrone.
Here.
TJ Lee. Eileen Loughran.
Here.
Mark Molnar. Here. And HHS representative. Okay. And if anyone who is not a member of the committee can introduce themselves.
Michelle.
Oscar Macias.
Frank Sean.
All right, we do have a quorum. If we take a look at today's agenda. Are there any updates or changes that anyone would like to propose to today's agenda? Any objections to approving today's agenda? All right, announcements.
I think I would just say that Dean is on his way, I'm sure, because I don't talk to him.
Okay. Any other announcements? All right, public comment. And as a reminder, council members can also speak as members of the public.
I'm sorry, I do want to make an announcement, too. I mean, I just want to make it clear that today is, I'm representing the HIV Prevention Planning Council as the DPH co-chair, but Eileen will be doing that as after this meeting. So we're together today. Thank you.
Any public comment? All right, great. Co-chair election. The co-chairs of the group will elect two co-chairs for this transition team. Nominations are now open. Okay.
I nominate Chip.
Second. Does Chip accept the nomination?
Yes.
All right. Any more nominations, Jack?
I nominate Andrew.
Is there a second to that?
Second.
Paul, second to that? Andrew, do you accept the nomination?
Sure.
Great. Any other nominations? Charles.
Lars Thomas.
Is there a second to that?
Second.
I would like to respectfully decline, but thank you.
Okay. Are there any other nominations? All right. Let's skip to do this by example, I guess. All those in favor of accepting Chip Sapanich as one of the co-chairs of the transition, please raise your hand. I remember, unfortunately, looks like that. All right. Okay. Any no votes? Any abstentions? All right, unanimous. All those in favor of electing Andrew Lopez as the second co-chair of the transition team, please raise your hand. All right, any opposed? Any abstentions? Also unanimous. So I'm now turning it over to our co-chairs. I wonder if maybe you and TJ should trade or something.
Yeah. Okay, so do you mind if I just take the next slide?
Take over.
Okay, so the next item on the agenda is the goals of the transition team, and we will review and discuss the following items. As far as background and operating agreements go, do we need to have a discussion about those? Are we signed agreements? Do we need to review them, Mark?
I think it might be good for the group to review. It might have been a while for some folks to have
a copy of it. It's no longer a draft. It has been approved by both the councils. So the description and mission of the work group, are there any questions or comments on this? It's a very narrow scope of work.
So I guess we could probably just review that whole mission there.
You want to
read it? That first.
Transition work group will operate as a joint work group between the San Francisco HIV Health Services Planning Council and the San Francisco HIV Prevention Planning Council. The mission of the Transition Work Group is to prepare for and define the scope of work of the Joint Executive Steering Committee that will mark the initiation of the merge of councils. The purpose of this merge is to ensure a continuum of HIV services for community members at risk for and living with HIV. Are there any questions or concerns or comments about what that means? Okay. All right. We already know the membership. I want members of both councils who are not part of the transition work group may attend meetings and contribute to the discussion, but will not have voting privileges. And lastly, administrative and technical support. Care council staff is, I guess, that's being shared by the Community Health Equity and Promotion Branch, HIV Services Section of the Department of Public Health, and from care council staff. Everyone's stirring the pot. Meetings will be voice recorded. So think before you speak. So public comment is limited to the public comment periods and will be allowed for each agenda item prior to each vote. And so here we are, the meeting is 3 months. We overdid the scope of work. Timeline. We know that this is lasting, hopefully, just till March. So your attendance is greatly appreciated at all three meetings, as we will be covering a lot of information. And then next steps. I'm not sure what this is referring to exactly.
Should we go over more in detail timelines? Since timeline will actually, I would think, lead to next steps. As far as, I mean, we only have two more meetings with this person, and definite work has to be accomplished. So
right.
We're going to push over the actual timeline.
Sure. Mark?
So I know at least two major things that have to happen from this group. A motion has to be put forward to both councils to allow the merge of the steering committee on the HHSPC and the executive committee of the HPPC. So that should happen because that will need time, of course, to get to both councils to be voted on and hopefully approved prior to the formation of this joint, in, I assume, April. That's the first part. And I think the second part of the scope of work is to actually define the scope of work of the joint steering exec. And that's a lot more of a loose amorphous topic, I think. So as timeline goes, would people feel comfortable seeing a motion at the very latest come out of this group by the end of the next meeting? Yes.
Yes.
I don't think that will probably take up the entire meeting time. So I think a lot can then be spent on developing what the actual scope of work of the joint steering exec is. Does that timeline work for you? Okay. So then, as far as next steps go, to develop the motion that would allow to merge, I think, myself on the care side, and I'm not sure who my parallel would be on the prevention or CHEP side, would have to take a look at our policy and procedures and bylaws and bring whatever is relevant forward so that whatever motions are crafted, take into consideration the poverty on votes for both councils. So that would certainly be next steps for myself. Who would that person on the non-care side be?
Yeah, I'll start with anyone.
Would you be able to bring, take a look at the HPPC bylaws or and policy and see whatever? I'm sure it's a small little sample. Okay. For the record, David Gonzalez has joined us, as well as Dean Goodman and Kevin Hutchinson. Okay, well, those are, that's one next step.
Tracy?
Yeah, sorry. At the joint co-chairs meeting, we had discussed the possibility of having a consultant at the joint executive steering committee just to assist with ensuring that things get done between meetings, to support the co-chairs in developing the agenda and moving things forward. You know, we touched a little bit on funding for that. Is that something that we want to put in our list of discussion points, whether it's today or if it's future? Seems like it would be a good conversation for this group to have.
What are your thoughts on this?
So if your suggestion is just be added to the agenda next month, I don't think that's
and we have a discussion then. Okay. Other matters?
Actually, can we just go back to the last thing, that the part that you and Oscar will be working on? Can we get that before the 72 hours before the next meeting?
Sure.
So we have time to review it.
Should be no problem for me, Oscar.
All right. As much time as we can. Ahead of time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No problem. If you want, Oscar, you could just email it to Ali and myself, and then we'll just package them together and send it out.
Other next steps? Nothing. Well, we can always add things as well to the agenda, the next agenda. Before we start defining the scope of work, I just want to say a few words about the tenor and the moving forward. In front of everybody, I respect the rules of engagement, and I'd like to follow these for our group. And then the other thing I'd like to encourage is that people start thinking outside the box. Kevin Hushkoff has arrived. That's a record show. Sandy. And not so much us and them, or this and that, or our way or your way, but ways and methods and policies that can embrace both values of both councils without alienating and without exclusion in the process. So no idea is crazy because we're charting new territory. And I know a few councils have merged across the country, but we are ahead of the pack. Spoke with Lenny yesterday. And Tuesday. And, he was interested in our process as we develop it, and he's also going to lend support as far as what he has seen in other places work or not work. And he very much wants to be included in knowledge of what's going on here. I just wanted to say a few words about cooperation. Dean?
Thank you. Just to add, folks that might know, Lenny is our first agreement.
I'm sorry.
Officer that we talk to you once a month. Usually falls the day after our full legal service plan consultant development self in the co-chairs of the board.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
We're going to have to remind ourselves.
Jack? I just wanted to kind of add to what Chip is saying. I think that one thing that Tracy said at the meeting on Monday, and that we had also talked about it in our executive committee meeting, is that ultimately what we're doing is we're building a new council. And it's not so much we're trying to fit pieces that don't necessarily fit together, but we're looking at sort of all the pieces that have built these two councils all over these years and figuring out how to build something that works well for our constituents from what we have to work with. And I think that in this process, the thing to remember, I think, is that we are doing this because we have the same ends in mind, right? The service and what the Care Council does for HIV-positive people is very similar to what the Prevention Council has been doing, and we all want to come to the same end. And so if we keep in mind the fact that we're trying to, stop an infection and care for people with HIV and diminish stigma and really create the healthiest community we possibly can, I think that letting that inform our work will smooth some of the sailing along the way.
Thank you. Any other comments? And is there, Tracy.
Sorry.
I don't have my glasses on.
I was trying to make sure everyone else spoke before I did. Just two things. First of all, I really appreciate the rules of respectful engagement. And I think the one that jumped out at me is it's okay to disagree and don't feel offended if someone does not agree with your position, et cetera. As you're saying, this is a landmark moment in HIV work in San Francisco, right? I mean, we should kind of notice that. Like, this is a big deal. And we've all been really working hard on it. And it's been really rewarding, and it's also been challenging. I think we can all say that at one point or another, your feelings got hurt, or I will say that at one point or another, my feelings were hurt, or I felt like I might be hurting somebody else's feelings, or I felt like I stepped in it in a way that I didn't mean to, or whatever. Right? I mean, that's what happens when you're developing something new. And so I just want to acknowledge that it's going to happen again. And I think that to the extent that we can all really take care of each other during that process, recognize that that's going to happen. We all have different perspectives we're bringing to the table. We're different people. There's a diversity in this room. And that's actually a good thing. And that sometimes saying things that are upsetting, it's not a good thing, but a good thing can come out of it because better understanding can come out. So I just kind of want to point that out because I think there's going to be times like that. And as Charles said the other day, we're branding something. You know, we're going to have something new that we can brand as something new. I just love that concept. And then just in response to what you're saying about the Ryan White project officer, the project officer that we work with in HIV prevention, her name is Melanie Sovine. And she's very interested in how this process will go. We haven't spoken recently about it, but when some of the other meetings were happening, she was really wanting to come out and attend those meetings. And so I'm sure she'll want to come out and attend, you know, the bigger council meetings once that gets going. So very much support there, too. And if there's anything we need to access through CDC, she would be very supportive of that.
I wanted to say a few words, too. For me, personally, and professionally, it's just really exciting to have this meeting. It's kind of, for me, like a big first step that I've been personally looking forward to for a really long time. As I'm sure Laura remembers, she and I were part of the HIV work group that Jimmy Boyce created a decade ago, was that now? Or you were as well? And we're part of that group. One of the things that we requested was take a look at moving the two councils together. And I know that people have brought it up over time. I know that I have when I was a co-chair of the Care Council. And a lot of times the reaction was like, oh, let's not. How about it? You know, let's not talk about this right now. We have so many other things. So for me, it's just really exciting to have this happening alongside all the other exciting and stressful things happening around KCA. It just feels like it's been a very long wind-up. And now we're at the top of the hill. Not like it'll go downhill, but it'll, you know, a lot of exciting things are finally happening all over.
So yeah, I would echo that as well. I mean, the President's National HIV/AIDS strategy really encompasses all of this. And I think I couldn't agree with you more that as we are trying to get ahead of the curve on this, we could really be a model for the rest of the country and actually around the world, much like Getting to Zero is trying to do. And as much as we can all start coordinating our efforts together, I think if we keep our clients in mind and their betterment and well-being, then this is going to be great for them. I really, truly believe that. So I think this is very important work that we're doing for them.
Yes, Mark.
One more. I know that prevention has had its process. I really just want to thank the Care Council, whose process I'm certainly a lot more familiar with, because I know that coming even to this point was a tough thing for a lot of people. There was, I think, a lot of very valid concerns would emerge, and it took a lot, I think, for many Care Council members to look at things, to look at the whole topic fresh, and to actually spend a lot of time developing things that made them feel okay to even get to the place we're at now. So I was just very thankful that Care Council members went in some ways outside of their comfort zone to really think more of the whole continuum of care and to adjust different lines in the sand. I think that's really awesome. It's what community planning should be about.
Yes, she's up.
Tracy, I'm glad you brought that point up in the rules of respectful engagement. And so with that in mind, Jackson, I really appreciate what you said, but for me, I see that there's some overlap in what we do, but I don't see right now that there's enough. And so I'm going to leave my mind and heart open in this process and, hope that I get educated from you guys that there is more than enough to make this an appropriate thing that we do. So.
Anyone else? Any public comment? Okay, so we have two next steps. Are we comfortable moving forward?
It's not only comment, but as far as public comment, I think as Lee demonstrated by speaking without being a voting member, I'd like to think that in this group that's going to be maintained, that if you're a council member, despite being a voting member or not, you're still welcome to the conversation. It's actually within our operating guidelines. So certainly, I think Oscar and Frank are welcome to contribute and should even feel welcome to join at the table.
So we'll move on to the action steps. So have a discussion just around creating joint executive steering committee policies, procedures, or just a discussion around policies, procedures, and developing trust in a shared culture. So we'll open up with policies and procedures. And
I can speak to what I've done on the care side of this, which is take a look at our bylaws. And I didn't find anything in the bylaws that specifically states what our steering committee makeup is. There are things that talk about the council as a whole. So I think the motion that will have to be developed will be amending or possibly replacing a policy within our policy procedures, which is actually a lot easier. If there's a bylaw change, it has to be noticed first the month beforehand, etc. So that's good news, I think, as far as the care side is concerned, as far as facilitating a quicker process. Process happens inevitably. So that's it for the care side on the policy, where that will need to be updated.
In our policies, it's defined what the makeup is for our for our executive, but I don't see that as any problem making a change.
So it's not within your bylaws either.
Is it in the bylaws? Yeah, I don't think so. I think we have more flexibility.
Okay, so we will be able to do this in a more timely way.
The one thing I wanted to point out is that because we're in more of a alternating meeting schedule, our next council meeting is in March. So whatever motion has to be prepared and approved before, what is that, March 9th, I think, or whatever the second March.
March 12th.
Thank you.
When does your exec meet?
The fourth Thursday of the month.
Okay.
So we already met for January. We'll meet at the end of February.
So I'm just trying to think of timeline. Do you, if a motion comes out of this committee, out of this work group, at the next meeting, will, as far as what your process is, will it have to go to your exec first and be vetted before going to the full council? And is there, does that work out as far as timeline? Oh, okay. Oh, so maybe it doesn't even need to be vetted by your exec because this is your... Okay. There you go. That makes it easier then, because it really goes straight from here, I assume, to the prevention council.
It's the same as a work group, isn't it? Making a motion.
Yeah, I think what we would do is we would, at exec, we would just connect, we would just put it into the language that needs to be in and agendize it. I think that's what the role would be there at that group. But if it's, I think we can do this as we go. As this group, things come out of this group, then the executive committee can turn that into the language that needs to go to the council.
I guess my concern, though, was if March. This group meets after your exec, which I think it does, that means that if something comes out February, it will be skipping your exec to go right to your council. And I think as Laura said, it's involved in exec, is that something that is okay for you guys?
Like I was saying, just if we can kind of take care of things as we go, then it'll be very little that has to be discussed.
Great.
And we could try to finalize it here within this group before it goes to the council.
Any other comments on policies and procedures? Great. Thoughts around developing trust in a shared culture?
We have an hour and a half to discuss this.
So one thing that stuck out to me is I thought maybe it might just be helpful to put back on the table what it is we're all here doing. I know the Prevention Council kind of voted for the framework that we decided on in December of 2013. And so I just wanted to make sure that we're all thinking and looking at this in the same exact way that it was kind of designed from the collaborative planning work group. There was a lot of work that went into it, and I thought that maybe that's something that that would help kind of frame the conversations that we have moving forward.
I think it also needs to acknowledge that there's differences in cultures between the two councils and take a look at what those might be, because those will be key to moving forward. So I would really like to have a discussion about shared values. And let's start with what we share and then look at where we might have some challenges with culture. Not structure, just culture. I think a shared value, for example, a shared value is, serving the community with respect to HIV. And I think those meld together pretty well.
Tracy,
and then Mark.
Sorry, not Tracy.
I'm
the other.
Sorry.
I think Dave
should have
their hand
on my
third one. Okay. I'm just not at the table because there's not a seat. So I just wanted to apologize for being late. I had a doctor's appointment. So that's all I wanted to say.
And your name?
Sorry. Stacia, Sherrick. Thanks.
Would you like us to make
a point?
There's
nothing I'm almost done anyway. So I'm going to interrupt the entire meeting.
I think we're going to.
I just wanted to loop back because I think that Chip, the points that Chip made are reminding me why we had the conversation back in September about potentially having a consultant is because we do have different values and we have some similarities, but we have some differences. So the thought was that in moving forward, in trying to identify what needs to work, like having that other person be able to really outline and track follow-up things that we need to do, rather than it being Mark and myself or Mark and whoever on our council of like following it, it might be more inclusive if it's someone that we all agree that is a collaborative and building into one. And one of the things that was discussed was a model similar to the healthcare reform task force and how a partner company, how they took the lead on that, but then there was still co-chair. So I just wanted to put that out there, that being that the conversation, we're moving so quickly on the agenda, we may just have time to have that conversation today, and I wanted to throw that out there.
So have Laura next.
I had a couple of thoughts related to Chip's comments about sort of the values that we share, and one of the things, having spent a lot of years on one council and a few years on the other council, one of the things that really strikes me as a common value is the focus on community voices and the ways in which we elevate community voices and community members as experts in what they know and can contribute to the conversation. And I think it's sometimes expressed slightly differently to, you know, the PIR versus, you know, like we've got different ways of talking about it, but it's still a value of community voices, a value of people who are program participants, consumers, the ways in which people engage with the different things that we, as a collective set of councils and health system, fund. And so it's valuing a diversity of voices and valuing a diversity of sort of communities participating at the table. And it's a very specific sort of prioritizing and elevating of people who have very immediate direct experience. And it gets talked about as consumers on the care side. It doesn't, you know, on the prevention side, it isn't necessarily described as consumers in the same way, but it's very much the same value of we want to hear from the people for whom these programs are intended, and we want to hear what their experiences are, what their needs are, and a very much a focus on hearing from people what their actual needs are and then figuring out how to address them. So that's one of the really common or shared sort of strengths and values that I feel is very much at the core of how both councils do their work. And again, I think we use slightly different language around it, but it's still, from my experience, very much the same thing. I do think that they're, you know, one of the main kind of cultural differences that I see between the two councils is the way that the councils interact with the health department. But I also have to say for both councils, that relationship has shifted really dramatically over time. And so, you know, it's more that they're at different places in a sort of pendulum swing rather than it's a completely different, Dean is smiling. but it's, it, you know, the both councils have been sort of like close, either in a more adversarial relationship with the health department to a closer relationship with the health department, and that's a partnership that has sort of changed form over the years for both councils. And so the fact that they're sort of at, you know, they're actually, I think, in fairly similar places right now. But that's as much a sort of matter of where the pendulums are at the moment rather than a sort of underlying cultural difference between the two councils.
Jack
next. I guess I was curious about about what you said, TJ, and kind of having this conversation around building trust and like what our shared vision is as a group. And I guess I was curious about if other people feel similarly, that there doesn't seem to be like a clear, I don't want to put words in your mouth, like a clear sort of like objective for that between the prevention council and the care council, or that a clear objective of what a merge council would be in its relationship to working with both HIV positive people and HIV negative people. And I don't know if anybody has anything else to say on that.
That's cool.
are you asking people to define the virtues of merging councils and so looking at the continuum of care altogether from negative to positive?
Well, I think maybe more.
I guess I just did it.
I think it's interesting that, like, for me, I see a very clear relationship between the work that the care council does for HIV positive people, the work that the HIV prevention council does for HIV positive people and for HIV negative people, and these things seem like they go well together. And then another person who is in the same, you know, who's been on this council for a long time and has as much invested in this merge and who's sitting in the same room could have a completely different perspective. And I think that's the thing that I'm like, oh, maybe we're not all on the same page in terms of what we think the objective.
I think you just said it though.
Yeah.
It's a matter of objective versus perspective.
Yeah.
We may have the same objective as, you know, the two councils, but perspective is dramatically different at times, not always, because we've had different goals, like in the sort of like different short-term goals. So I think that maybe is what TJ was getting at, but I hear what you're saying for sure.
Anybody else?
I mean, I kind of missed it on the conversation in the last 10 because I wasn't at the inner circle part, so I just heard the presentations. And I'm just still kind of curious that it's like, if what are the fears? It's like this, both councils do the work right now, so people are getting happy with what the council's kind of performance is. And what's the fear that's going to be lost when they're merged? Does someone feel, is anybody feeling like, I mean, is there a sense that you know, there's going to be something that is going well and then won't go well, or are both councils still going to be able to function? I mean, because to me it seems like both councils will be able to, you know, as one council will still be able to perform as well as what they were doing as individuals. I mean, call me naive, but it seems like, you know, people know how the councils work, and it's just, you know, taking two councils and putting them together, and the work load will just be handled. There's going to be more cross-contamination or cross-filtration or something. You know, so I don't have any anxiety about it whatsoever. But, you know, I'll pull down, I guess.
So I saw a couple of hands go up. Was that a response to?
Yes.
Okay. So I had Mark, and then Bill, and then Sasha.
I can't speak for the Provincial Council, of course, but I know that one of the themes coming from the care side as far as anxieties around merging the council is based around the idea that over the past decade, maybe longer, the care council has certainly moved along a path where it can and can very righteously attest to the fact that it is a community-based council that is not driven by providers, by facilities only, by DCAs. It's driven by the dialogue between all three partners, and really does in many ways center client as part of that process. And I think from my understanding, a lot of the hesitation about bringing it, it's the potential of losing that. And so that also speaks to why a lot of the different motions were developed on the care side to make sure that that isn't lost. Those motions in many ways corresponded exactly to those understandable anxieties as far as turning a community council into something that might be more government driven.
Bill?
Sorry. A lot of new faces for me. Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
Wait, it happens all the time. I'm totally used to it. I just wanted to.
I call that new Tracy earlier.
I know. Well, Dean and Tracy are apparently, or Dean and Eileen are somewhere.
I really appreciate what everyone was saying. I mean, around the differences of what we have to discuss and deliberate upon and the work ahead of us. Just for me, I think it's paramount to point out that the greater objective for this group was sort of move beyond the deliberation but sort of what the scope is and what the process is and what the similarities are and the commonality as well as the differences where we need to parent out and make a decision or find common ground or a compromise to make things happen. Because, you know, reading the draft of this, which I always support, is that the purpose is to merge to ensure HIV services for our community members at risk or living with HIV. So, you know, it's just a helpful reminder that the charge in front of us is the road that we're already on, and making it a productive and smooth and well-engineered and well-planned road that gets us to where we need to get to, not if we're going to build it or not. So that's just what I wanted to talk about as far as objective before I bring that up.
Thank you. Sasha?
I just wanted to second that Mark said. I think that's really the concern, is that we talk about being community based and listening to the community, but yet, the 50%. So I think that's a really huge concern, is that with so many mandated seats and so many this and that, there are going to be less people representing the prairie communities that we're talking about helping.
Sorry, these are responses to what was just said?
Yes.
Okay, so is it Jack, then me, and then Charles?
I guess my question is, I feel like the idea that there is an anxiety that there's a different culture with the prevention council than with the care council, and that implies, I think, and I want to be corrected if I'm not correct, that there is a perception that the prevention council somehow either doesn't center the community voice or doesn't center the community voice enough, or in a way that people are comfortable with or familiar with, and I guess I don't think that's true. So, I'm wondering if we have anxiety about things that where we're seeing the same thing from a different perspective and thinking that, right, it's like the elephant in the room where one person's like, I think it's a snake, and then the person's like, I think it's a suitcase, but the room is dark and they're all touching the same elephant. Like, are we all talking about the same thing?
I have to clarify what I said. I think I misspoke or didn't include something. The anxiety wasn't so much around we don't want to turn into the prevention council. The anxiety is we don't want to lose what we've gained so far. So when people talk about all of that, their anxieties, they're mainly talking about changing a community council. It wasn't so much, oh, prevention, we don't want to be like that. It was, oh, we are great how we're doing now, and we want to maintain the things that we think is positive about our council.
Yes.
So I'm sorry
that's
if I didn't include that.
That's what I meant.
I guess my curiosity would be, why would we think that we would lose those things? Do you know what I'm saying?
So, losing track of you, we're keeping track of this. But TJ and then Sage, any responses?
Is this my response to this, or my actual leaving on the list a while ago?
You are on the list. I was working responses.
Right. I just wanted to make sure I'm like giving up my.
So,
okay, so we have very, like, we have, you know, five committees. We meet over the month. I'm curious, like, I feel like if we're spending time talking about prevention in joint meetings, we're going to be losing some of the time that we have to discuss the things that we need to discuss for the HIV positive community. And without expanding a number of meetings in that whole process. And I have to say, I am a little, and this might be useful, is to let us know where your funding's coming from, where you guys think you want to go with your funding. Because a few people have the feeling that this is a grab for money. And so, you know, and just to be honest, we'll put it out there. So, you know, I feel like in this process, we should be further along and know really, like, what you guys are doing, where your money's coming from, and, you know, and
this is where
that might clear up some of the tension with some people around this process.
Okay. I think I had Lee next, and then Sasha, and then
Charles was there somewhere.
Charles, sorry.
Are the hands are talking about responses, or are we talking about on the list?
Responses to what was said.
I really think
still responses to what?
Yeah, can you please respond to that?
Point of order.
Yes.
I would like to point of order. We have a list. The responses should be come after the list, speaker.
Yeah.
So I just want that point of order. If we're talking about respectful engagement, and we're talking about Robert's Rules of Order, which both council knows, the speaker goes first before any responses on both sides.
Even when someone has a question about what was said by someone,
let me just jump in from an admin perspective here. I think because so many potential comments might be garnering instant reaction. I know that I'm instantly reacting to three things at the same time right now. I think that you should just go to
the list.
You stick with the speaker's list.
Yes.
People just need to remember who they're responding to. Say, I'm responding to TJ's comment about this, which I agree with or disagree with. And the only time someone gets to cut in line is if they're clarifying something.
Or shouldn't it be to respond to this gentleman's comment?
No, unless it's clarifying, I think if we start doing
that. That's all I want to do, is just clarify that I was not saying prevention is not thinking about the community. It's just saying that we're afraid we're going to lose, so we're not going to have enough room for the 50%. Is anybody listening, or am I just talking? I'm just clarifying what this gentleman said, so I'm not sure that, is that cool?
But one of the things you said about not having enough room is, it was specifically about mandated seats, and a lot of those mandated seats overlap. So we're not going to be duplicating mandated seats. They're just mm-hmm. going to be sort of one thing. As opposed to having twice as many mandated seats, we're actually just going to have roughly about the same amount.
Okay, but do positive providers count? Those count as unaffiliated positive consumers.
That's both the providers, and they're not going to be unaligned consumers. But my point was that we're not going to have.
Yeah. So,
we're
going back to the list. Thank you for the clarification. It was getting a little hard.
More back of everything.
So, TJ, did you have something else to add?
Okay. Yeah.
And then we'll go
back to the list. I like the point that Laura brought up about we have very distinct cultures and, you know, we've worked with different organizations very well. And then go to something that Eileen said. At first when you said you wanted to bring, or Tracy may have said this, wanted to bring in an outside consultant, I kind of bristled at that, quite honestly. But I would like to maybe put forth that we really think to try to get somebody local that has worked with both councils before, that both councils have a trust with, like Carter and Company. Because I have to say, when Michael was here during the collaborative group, there was a ramp up time for trust from some people, and I think that had an impact on the outcomes of that group and some of the tension that may or may not have existed depending on when you were there.
I'm passing my hand to the
end of
the
list. And so I think it would ease the process if we pick somebody that we've worked with before.
So going off the original list that I had going, I had Mark Nixon, Lee, Charles, and then Pasha.
I think that's the original list.
Oh, the original list. I forgot what it was.
I don't care where I am. I just want to be honest.
I'll bring what I was going to talk about. I just raised my hand now, so we're talking about that. So you crossed me off the box. I think the outside consultant, I think, is a very interesting idea that was discussed, you know, as Eileen and Tracy mentioned at the leadership meeting last year. I have a couple concerns about it. They're very vague, so we don't have any kind of instantly no or yes type response. But I do know sort of what TJ was saying. That consultant became a lightning rod of a lot of tension anxieties, and I think that could happen to anyone we bring in, no matter how nice they are, how local they are. Because, I mean, I thought Michael was nice. And he became a lightning rod. And I think that could happen to anyone. So I'm concerned about that. I'm also concerned because our joint is going to be our first run of us literally working together to talk about policy issues. This is our pre-run for just developing the joint. If we can't do that without an outside consultant and just two sets of administrative staff, then why? You know, to me, it's just, the more I think about it, I'm just like, we're holding off the inevitable. But again, I have no line in the sand. It's just occurring to me just now.
Right, Lee?
So I wanted to, I think Eileen's suggestion and recommendation for an outside consultant, from my perspective as the creator and current co-chair of the task force, is their Carter's work was instrumental in making sure that moved the process along. It's different than what happened with Michael, and that Michael had to take a leadership position in kind of leading that group along. The administrative function that Carter accomplished with us and was able to do it full time really moved us along much quicker and was able to bring us to a point where we really could produce the work that we did. And that's not saying anything that the two administrative staff of either planning council could do, but I'm telling you, when they devoted full time to it, it was invaluable to us. We couldn't have done and produced the work that we did without it. Increasing membership, I think it's important for me when I remember expanding both planning councils is the contribution that other community members are going to bring to this body. Negative people and people at risk of becoming infected are so important to this dialogue. We actually can't, and this is what Getting to Zero is working on, we can't do the work of no infections, no deaths, zero stigmas without those members present. They were only going to add to the conversation and enrich the conversation and making sure that we can get to a point where that infections don't happen the way they do now, where we're really reaching the hardest communities, which we're tasked to work with, right? And bringing into care and keeping in care, right? So it's really important that we have those voices. I don't see less HIV people on the council as being a detriment, not at all. I think bringing more people on and their perspectives is really enriching the dialogue and the conversation that we all need to be having if we're going to take care of everybody in this community. Thank you.
Charles.
So, I'm going to start with saying this is going to be undiscovered country. like Star Trek, they go to a planet that's undiscovered, and actually we have more commonality than most. TJ's my turn, please. So, just wanting to know that letting you know that talking about Michael DeMayo, that didn't work for the council. If both administration of the prevention and care cannot work together without consultation and without the council, then what's wrong with the leadership? Hear us out on this. Here, me as a person living with HIV and AIDS, I trust fully the administration of both council to do the work and the scope of work that needs to be transitioned to emerge. It's going to serve the community of people living with HIV and AIDS, the affected community and their family, and we're going to bring in more negative people on the council. I have no problem with that. I just want the culture of, sure, they're different culture of prevention, but we're not far off from the table, people. Let's do the work and the scope of work. And this is not, what we're talking right now on the table is about merging and about the culture, and we're not even bringing up the membership, and that needs to be put aside. And what we're talking about is the trust of the council to be comfortable with each other. That's with the joint steering and executive about membership, about overlapping. Let's, whatever you guys want to discuss on the elephant in the room, let's discuss it and let's go forward.
Aja, next.
Bob. And I'm speaking as an African American 45-year-old negative man living in San Francisco since 88. And to hear the transition team say they don't want to lose what they got, that bothers me because I've seen a lot of friends of mine die at the Laguna Honda right here in the neighborhood in Tenderloin. And to hear you don't want to lose what you got, that takes it back, way back, because you have a lot of activists, either in Castro, Tenderloin, wherever in the city, that fought a hard fight to get where we're at now. So we have to really look at whose shoulders we're standing on. So to say you don't want to lose what you got, really think about what you're saying and who's reading these minutes. Thank you.
Thora?
I want to say earlier, I mostly wanted to respond to TJ's concerns about the money and the funding, and I feel like that's, I mean, on the one hand, that's a very easy question to answer, and honestly, I think to some extent, how the money gets spent is one of the things that's going to change the least in a new council scenario, because for both sides, our funding is so prescribed by the federal laws that attach to it. So, you know, peer funding, aside from a very few exceptions, can't be spent on people who are HIV negative, right? But it does need to be spent or can be spent on prevention with positives, the same as the CDC funding can be spent on positive people who prevention with positives is being spent on things like by people are positive or negative, but there are also restrictions around the CDC funding. Can't be spent on housing, can't be spent on food, can't be spent on some of the things that are really core central elements of how we've chosen to spend our revenue dollars in San Francisco. So I think between the fact that, and certainly, you know, having the, seeing the CDC budget, seeing how San Francisco spends prevention dollars, is those are all answerable questions, and we can certainly maybe we take some time at the next transition team meeting if that's useful to sort of go over for both sides. I think here's how prevention dollars are spent, here's how care dollars are spent. The prevention budget is in terms of the CDC funding is substantially smaller than the Ryan White dollars. It's getting closer since Ryan White is shrinking faster than the CDC dollars are, but they're both going down. And then they've both been backfilled by local general fund dollars, as everyone's aware. So they're increasingly as general fund dollars. And then on the prevention side, there have been a set of programs and services that have never been eligible for federal funding, and so San Francisco has consistently funded those with local dollars, and that's mostly starting to success where there's a federal ban on spending those dollars. And then on the local level, the equivalent has been how we funded housing when HRSA restricted how long we could house people with Ryan White dollars, and so we shifted a lot of that to general fund has been sort of equivalent. But on both sides, there's been sort of creativity, but on both sides, the dollars are shrinking overall and replaced with local dollars. So I think that the various federal laws and restrictions on funding is going to prevent any significant shifts in it. And I think, you know, the things that have made people think, how are we spending money, like PrEP, for example, that's become a new, you know, budgetary issue when it didn't used to be, is one of those things that is sort of, while we can't use care dollars for it, and the state is thinking about an ADAP for PrEP sort of program and things like that, I think it will start to look more like care, even though we won't be using care dollars for it, but it'll go through sort of care channels, right? So that's, but I think, you know, in general, I think the funding is sort of the least, at least from my, the conversations that I've been a part of, the funding is the lowest motivator compared to sort of better coordination and better linkage and better ways of moving people if they test positive, how do we move them into the system that's there for them? How do we make sure we've got the, you know, the continuum that's really there marking out their pathways, and we aren't using funding silos as becoming barriers to people getting access to it.
Tracy?
Laura said a lot about the funding, just coming from the, I work for the health department, so with HIV prevention, we don't have a funding issue. We're not looking for more funding, I mean, from care. And it's really about the fact that treatment and care is prevention, and that's a real shift that's happened in the last 5 years. And I think, without going into great detail here, maybe that's something that we need to have a presentation on, is what do both councils oversee in terms of funding, and what's the model and the philosophy and the approach? We've done a little bit of that, but it might be useful. I mean, given what TJ said, I think it could be useful to have that conversation again. You know, where this initially, we've been talking on and off. I've been working on HIV prevention for a lot of years, 20 or more. And the conversation about the two councils coming together has been raised for those many years. And the first time it really made sense to me, I'll be really honest, as a prevention person, was when we started looking at treatment as prevention. Because everything that is funded by the Care Council is prevention. Because it's ensuring that people are getting care and supporting health. And when people are healthy, that's a first priority of prevention, and the second is the prevention of transmission. So it doesn't have to change at all for treatment to be prevention. So everything that's happening that you're doing is contributing to HIV prevention. So that's the, you know, and then, you know, and less of what we do in HIV prevention and oversee in this council is with people who are negative. There's a lot of concern about that, right? But needle exchange is reaching both populations. And now I think PrEP is one of the important things that's really focused just on people who are HIV negative. And then, of course, there's substance use and mental health issues. So just kind of wanting to frame it like that. And then I get it's just such a strength, I think. That's what really struck me is when we can look at what we're funding. I mean, we've had, who was it? Somebody at the foundation who was like, okay, there's so many programs that are prevention with positives. How do we all know what we're all doing, right? And so we started having Eileen pull together a network of people who were doing HIV prevention with people who were positive. So it's that kind of strengthening of like, oh my gosh, you're doing that? Well, then we don't need to do that. We can reach this population. So I think it's that too, like how many agencies are both councils overseeing the funding for? And how can we strengthen that so we can expand our reach or deepen our reach rather than duplicate? You know, so I think that's a real strength. Also, not I don't think many people in the mayor's office or the board of supervisors see the difference in our work. It's all taking, you know, ensuring that people in this community have care, whether that's prevention or care, you know. And I think there's been a little bit of response about like, well, wait, why are you talking? And you're talking, coordinate, you're talking with us. Let's be together on this. And I think that's a real motivator. So I don't need to tell you guys all that, but I just wanted to repeat that a little bit. And then the last thing I just want to say about the consultant, it is not my idea. As a lightning rod, also I think sometimes, unfortunately, don't mean to be that person. But, it's really the joint co-chairs have talked about it, and so I just don't want it to be attached to me. And really, it's about having a neutral body. It's not about whether the two councils can work together or staff can work together. It's having a neutral person. We're structured so differently. Mark is your director. We don't have a director for HIV prevention. We have Eileen, who's been the primary staff person, will not be any longer because she'll be the co-chair. I have a bigger job than I can manage anymore, so I won't be that. Oscar has a small role. So it's noticing that, too, you know, and how can we kind of provide an opportunity? And I'm not even going to say the name of the man that helped us work with the collaborative planning. It's too bad that it went that way. That is a good man, and I won't allow my heart to open up to any negative comments about him. I'm sorry it didn't go well, but I think that was because of all the tension that was in the room with us trying to come together. Wow, I'm talking longer than I meant to. Anyway, the point really is about us working together. What do we need to support it, and how do we build this trust? And this is building the trust in me. So thank you.
A lot of what I said was covered much better than how I would say it. I remember the conversations about looking at having a consultant come, and it wasn't about, you know, neither of Mark and his excellent staff or the folks at Prevention not being able to provide the work or to get along to provide the work jointly, but it was just the amount of it, the perspective of a neutral voice, and it's going to be a lot of work. It's a lot of work. So I don't want to outright say we should or shouldn't. I think we should continue to have an open mind about it, because as we meet in the next couple months and we start to see how much information we're going to need and how much follow-up we're going to need and how much coordination we are going to need and note-taking and distribution, it's going to be a lot of work. So I'm okay with either. I'm supportive of either. I just want us to follow us with an open mind, look at what the very complex task ahead of us that joint steering and executive committee is going to do, and to all of us with an open mind look at perhaps there's some advantage to finding someone who's local and experienced on both sides and neutral who can take this on and provide the extra need help, because I think both sides already have a lot to do, but I am confident they could do it if it's pressed upon them. But I just want us to have a conversation with us and have an open perspective, open mind on it. And I want to echo what Tracy said in the collaborative working group. And what Mark said, there was a lot of strong opinions and a very strong possibility that whoever was picked to perform that, Madeline Albright would have probably perhaps been challenged in charting a course that would have made everybody in that group happy, because it was like the first time we came together. So So I've also worked with this person that was selected for that obviously thankless task that was put ahead of him last year, and hold him in high regard and don't think that there was anything that was intentional or slighted or done in a negative way. There were some things that were potential obstacles and more potential ones than I think anybody would have faced, which is how we came together and how differently we were looking at this and how much there was to do. So I just wanted to put that out there and ask everyone just to think about all those with a really open mind and what the larger goal is and how we can support each other to look at all the work and all the details. There's so many details that we're going to have to throw down at the next meeting, the following meeting, and how we can do that and work together and have an open process and a support process to do that.
Okay.
David?
What?
Instead, the consultants can do, and I'm so glad you brought this up, I'm going to use that as an example, is the consultants can actually look at the parity between all of our policies, procedures, and bylaws and say, you have a 50% positive consumer. We had on the HIV Prevention Council a different level of participation, but in my history on the council, there were many times, because we had a difference of of agreement where people didn't have to disclose their status. So there were several years, many years, in fact, where we had 50% or more who were positive, but they didn't necessarily admit or come out for whatever reason. What I think having the consultant will do is the housekeeping of putting all of the parity, the matching, shining the concerns and the anxieties of where we just spent several weeks in December looking at a bunch of areas that we thought this is not going to fix to the betterment of the care council. We actually went through some of our transitionals. What did we need to do for the next year that might not be in sync as a betterment, you know, not to better us or to better anybody, to say that we knew these might not be in sync. And I think having a consultant allows exactly what you said, the leaders to do the job, which we know they can do, and present the, here's we've done a parity, here's where there's going to be some, we didn't use that, we didn't use that as a measure, we didn't have that as a standard, this is a standard, has been successful here, can we apply it, is there any discussion, where do we want to go? I think there's a lot of language that gets used differently, unaffiliated, affiliated, and I think that's one of the strengths and assets that bringing in somebody like a hardware company, because they can do all that stuff in the background, bring it up, keep it focused, because then we can have the bigger discussions is how do we gain trust, how do we move through the process, and how do we have an end result that is going to work for people. So that's my outside circle.
Jack?
Originally, I wanted to kind of speak to the idea that the work of prevention and how it supports the work of prevention, but I think that the only thing I wanted to, in addition that I'd like to say is that in terms of the consultant and the idea of consultants being a lightning rod, I think that in some ways that is might be exactly why we want a consultant, in the sense that if we work, if we kind of all go into the room together with our leadership and things happen that we can, things are set or things happen that we can never take back again, we're still stuck working. Right, so there is something about bringing in this neutral outside person that can maybe is willing to take the thankless job that we had given Michael and kind of get a little, possibly get a little bit shit on by us, and then leave, and then we're not stuck with being like, well, you said this 2 years ago, and now it's in this guy, or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Like that takes that energy and it moves it out of our vicinity and away from us, and we're left to be able to work successfully with each other. So I wouldn't want the job, but somebody will.
I'm going to skip myself very much.
Did you see my hand earlier?
Yes, I have
my
hand.
All right.
There's so a long, there's a long
his
list.
Hand must have come up before mine and after mine.
Okay. Yes.
Got it.
Two things. First of all, I think between the lead, Jack, and Frank's comments, I'm feeling a 1A piece on the list. And I really liked it. Got really excited that when Frank said someone who could actually look at both policies and procedures and do all that. That was exciting. And I also love your comment about they'll get to leave.
Take the crap.
Yeah. So I don't want to rescind my comments. I think they're still valid. But I think I got sold on the idea. The second thing is, I think I wanted to respond to Aja. If the phrase you were talking about came out of my mouth, when you said we don't want to lose what we've got, and you said that, was that in response to something that I said?
No, it was.
Oh, then I have no need to clarify.
Yeah,
the never mind, I'm done.
I think they were referencing when you said it.
Okay, let me clarify whatever someone was referencing, what I was saying, was talking about. So, by lose what we've got, I was referencing, I think before you came in, the idea that the care council has spent many years developing a system of care that, you know, is coordinated, collaborative, and have created centers of excellence that has really supported the San Francisco model that targets all these different at-risk communities. And all of this process is often led by the people who are actually receiving those services as well. And so the care council doesn't want to lose that. So I just want to make sure that you realize that's what that phrase meant. It certainly wasn't a kind of complacent, like, we just want to keep what's ours kind of thing.
Okay. So I'm just going to run through the remaining people since people don't think they're on the list. It's TJ, Aja, Charles, Sasha, Mary Lawrence, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Paul, and then myself. It's a long list. So
You're doing great.
I got a couple of points there. And Mark, I appreciate that you just said that, and I want to kind of add to that. None of us are on the Care Council, like, or as politicians or anything. We're not afraid of losing our seat. We're afraid of somebody from within the HIV-positive community losing a chance to be at the table and have a seat. And so with that in mind, you know, one of the things that I'm concerned about is, you know, I mean, I may be a program manager for a prevention of positive program, but I'm here as a member of the public, as a council member. I don't represent the foundation at all, okay? And I think when you have an HIV-positive provider, you there's a difference in their view and what they can express. So, and then the lightning rod comment, I think that's great because, yeah, I think with the right person, they get paid to take some of the BS and be the lightning rod. But I also think what Mark said earlier is, you know, we have, maybe we should look at that. If that's such a problem for us that we can't, we need a consultant and then it's still a problem, then that might tell you a lot about this process and how this process will turn out in the long run. And then Tracy, you know, I think when we talk about HIV prevention and then, you know, prevention with positives, I think that HIV negative people stay negative because we have, you know, we get people into care, we make them medically adherent, and, you know, that's a great byproduct, HIV prevention out of that. But to me, it's about taking care of HIV positive people. And somebody brought up the fact that we have the same community, and I think it was David.
Yes.
We don't. We are the HIV, you know, HIV Planning Council. We take care of HIV positive people. If HIV negative people don't become positive because of a byproduct of what we do, that's fabulous and wonderful. But for me, our goal is to take care of HIV positive people and make sure they have the best care that they have. So, and then, you know, a little, well, Laura, thank you for the breakdown in funding. I mean, most of that I've heard, but I appreciate you coming again. And, I'm just afraid that, you know, there might be a little creativity in how we, you know, like, oh, well, this program really does this, so we can move some of this care funding over here to do this. And, you know, I just, that's what I was saying.
Great.
Asha?
And I wanted to speak to the consultant thing. And I'm very frugal when it comes down to spending money, be it for care or prevention. And I would just like to know where that money coming from and pay for the consultant, and how much does it cost to pay for it? I mean, how much does the consultant cost? Because it's going to come from some program. It's going to take away from some program, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not a politician, nor do I work for any agency. So I'm just a community member that speaks out for my both positive and negative friends that are stuck out here in the Tenderloin, going through whatever they go through and that I go through to be able to make it through this maze of different things you have to go through to get services. So if someone can answer that for me.
The next person we have is Charles.
I'm actually rethinking about what Frank said about the consultant, and maybe it would be a good idea for the consultant because it would free the leadership and the staff to be more involved with the discussion and on the table. So I'm really trying to be open-minded about the consultant. And Harder and Companies has proven themselves to be a good consultant and has worked with the council and with both council, actually. So I'm really thinking about that. Can we go back on the timeline? I have a problem with the timeline. If the discussion on the table is 3 months that we're talking about, I would really like to extend that to 4. Because with all the discussion on the table, I don't think it's going to be enough time for prevention. And I'm more thinking about prevention because your executive could
committee doesn't meet, or your prevention council isn't meeting, it's like every quarter. And I'm really concerned that the timeline is too fast. I wanted to give all the issue and work out before any motion or motions on the floor to be settled, because I don't think tonight there's going to be a motion on the floor except the motion that somebody might is the next action step about the consultant.
Station.
I need to say if my comment was maybe on more visceral level to what this gentleman David, I think his name is. I understand what he's saying, but I just want to say I just had a gut reaction to being positive and being negative. It just, being positive is, tells me you have a whole other body in addition to negative people don't have to do a lot of the things that positive people have to do. They don't have to get up in the morning, take their meds, throw them up, take them again, take their meds again, you know, in 12 hours, deal with their blood work being screwed up, deal with their kidneys failing. There's a whole other world going on there. In addition to infecting your relationships, affecting your, whether you have a significant other, affecting who you tell and who you don't tell. I think that needs to be respected.
Very much.
I really appreciate the way this agenda was organized so that there is this opportunity for people to just speak their minds. And we're accustomed at the council, you know, we have to have a motion on the table and then we can have a discussion and then we have to vote, you know, so this is good. You know, we can just talk here, and I'm really appreciating what I'm hearing. I am sorry to have missed about an hour of the meeting. I was in clinic before that. There are two things I wanted to say. One is I want to speak in favor of having a consultant, but I see that we really, it's going to be so important to select one that most people trust. Maybe not every single person. It's hard to get that, but that the majority of us trust, and perhaps that will take us a long way toward the rest of our process. And people have spoken, I think, very well about the merits of having a consultant. And I also, just as a medical provider, I also had a strong reaction, David. And I just want to, I've been on the council since 2002, and I have seen so many people go in and out of Laguna Honda, get cancer diagnosis after cancer diagnosis, die, you know, on the council. People who are HIV positive are dealing with catastrophic health issues. I think it is different, and they rally and they come back. I mean, it's incredible. People coming in wheelchairs, people walking in with canes, people barely able to get here to be a part of this process, and not to mention that the eloquent things that Stacia talked about that are not a part of the catastrophe, but just the day-to-day life. What I hear from folks on the council who say we don't want to lose the HIV positive voice is the fear that somehow services that are helping people stay alive may not get the advocacy that they need. And so I want to speak to that and just have that be a part of the discussion.
Paul?
I need to check my head a little bit and try and get back to how we impact what's happening on the streets. You know, so I work with Nintendo, and I see a lot of people who are out of care. You know, I see a lot of people who are, especially my clients are high risk negatives, positives who are in care, and then positives who are lost a lot of care. And there's a catastrophic situation, it's devastation. People who are just on the brink, teetering on the brink of being infected. And, you know, it seems like, I think what, I'm not going to speak for David, but what I see when I go out in the course of my work is there's a big connection between, you know, linking people to care, and there's also people with those skills that help do the prevention. It's not that they're the same people, you know, but there's a similar cultural situation where you're with a bunch of people who are shooting speed over here, a bunch of people who are shooting heroin over here, a bunch of people who are smoking crack here, and then have, like, you know, SRO sex parties or whatever. And there's people who are high-risk negatives, and there's people who are positive. And, you know, my thing is, like, there can definitely be a coordinated body that has the, you know, the skill and the representation to manage those populations that isn't, you know, discriminating against people who are positive and people who are negative and cutting up fucking dollars in an unfair way or any of that shit, you know? So it seems, you know, and, you know, we're talking about 16,000 people with HIV in San Francisco, and maybe 8,000 people who don't have undetectable viruses, therefore risk so many other complications. And so, you know, and there's people still get infected one every day, right? So there's work to be done, for sure, right? And, you know, people in this room are entrusted with doing that for their communities. And, you know, whatever the legitimacy is, this has been very informative for me, because I was like, what the fuck is the problem? But now I hear genuine concerns, and it's like, oh, this is great. I'm getting a much better perspective on, you know, it's very heartfelt concerns, you know. But I really think these are, you know, absolutely surmountable. You know, we can get it together to coordinate what we're talking about here. And I don't feel it's going to be, any, you know, there's going to be a loser, you know. So it's just, you know, it's how, what if, you know, if this is something that isn't going to work, then we should just, you know, all go back to our work. But it seems like we're invested in the process of merging both councils. And, you know, and again, I still see it as an achievable goal. But I do think the timeline's a little bit unrealistic because we've sat around. This has been very useful for me personally, but I think in terms of getting to the merger parts and having action policies and juice and the meat, you know, together, it's going to take a little while.
Thank you. So I'm just going to go over the rest of the speakers list, and then we may have to cut the speakers list there so that way we can stay on time. So I have myself, Jack, Ken, Mark, Aja, Chip, and the station. So I kind of just want to echo.
I'm just
going to
get myself on the list first. Okay. Thank you.
Just kind of echo what Paul is saying, and, you know, sitting in this room and kind of hearing all these concerns. Sitting on the prevention council, I was just like, oh, well, this makes so much sense of why we would merge, because we want to, like, have everyone sitting at the table and, like, have all concerns kind of sitting down, because whether you're positive or negative, yes, there's a ton of things as a positive person, like, that I know a negative person doesn't have to go through. But at the same time, like, as a positive person, if I can prevent one person from having to have the experience of becoming positive and then having to go through everything, that's really why I sit on the council. I mean, it's to really help prevent people from winding up in my circumstance, and to help people from having to be take their meds and throw them up and then wind up in the hospital and wind up in Gunada. And that's, I mean, I think the reason why we're all here is very valid, and I think we all, there's a lot of awesome concerns that we have from both sides, but it kind of just invigorates me more to kind of continue moving forward with what we're doing. And I think it's kind of a circular thing in just, you know, like, just the spectrum of prevention and care, kind of, you want to prevent someone from becoming positive. Once they do become positive, you want to get them on treatment so that way they prevent other people from getting infected. So it's kind of a big circle. And for me, I mean, it's kind of why I joined the prevention council, to honestly be a part of the two councils kind of merging. And just so happened when I joined that council, the collaborative planning grant work group was formed, I joined it, and then this is happening. So yay. But I mean, this is really what I wanted, just to kind of see to increase services and access for those people that have a hard time getting to the meetings. Like, they have to go to your meeting, and then
people hardly make it to the Prevention Council meeting. Why? Because this is outside of their realm of spectrum of thinking, but really, if we were all sitting in the room at the same time, they're reaching a much broader audience. They're really, their words are kind of going farther, and we're all taking it to heart and really making sure that the cycle kind of breaks at some point and we can reach that getting to zero moment, which kind of gives me tingles on the down my back just talking about it. So yeah, I think we all have good hearts, and I think we just need to figure out the logistics of making this work. Jack?
Okay, so I don't think that, I don't know if many people who are on the Care Council are familiar with this, so I'm just going to give like a brief little thing and then go into what I want to say. So there's a lot of things that changed with the way that we do HIV prevention in the last 4 years. So the National HIV strategy really shifted the focus of prevention away from health education and risk reduction, which was sort of the bread and butter, towards this kind of prevention through care model. Medicalizing prevention and having it be basically the lucky output of care, right? That we get so many people who are HIV positive into care, and then it just so happens we don't have any more HIV negative, or no more people become HIV positive.
Lucky output.
So, like the idea that we would just end up not having new infections because we did all this work putting people into care.
Care first,
and then HIV negative people being like an afterthought in that sort of thing. That's my perspective. I feel like, you know, and it's a little bit weird to take this perspective, it's a little bit like I'm banging some sort of like reverse racism drum. It's weird. I understand that being HIV negative is not is a position of privilege in terms of stigma and the way that our society operates. So I want to recognize that before I say this, but I also feel like there's a very real concern from me as an HIV negative person, from other people in our council, that because of this shift of the way of HIV prevention in the last 4 years, and this merge with the Care Council, that the idea of working with HIV negative people with the intention of staying HIV negative is going to be a lost cause, that we will not do it, that we will only take time to focus on care, and then in focusing on care, we'll then also be, you know, serving HIV negative people. And I think that's a major, major concern of mine. So the idea that, like, I hear what you're saying, that, like, we've got a scope of work, you've got a scope of work, we try to get it together, and now we're not taking enough time serving HIV-positive people. I can hear that as a concern. I feel similarly, right? That, like, there's so, you know, if our pie used to be maybe 50% care, 50% health education, risk reduction, now it's like 75-25, right? Like, most of what HIV prevention is doing is around linking people to care and getting HIV positive people virally suppressed. So there's a very shrinking focus on HIV negative people, and I'm concerned with that, and I think it's something that we need to take into consideration as being a valuable thing to take time and energy putting work into in this new process, that there is a legitimate reason why we should bother to do prevention for HIV negative.
Okay.
Well, two things. I agree that everybody should be at the table, including the negative, because their perspective is just as important as a positive perspective. The needle exchange has kept a lot of people negative, just like I hope one day the crack pipe can keep people negative. So I understand the purpose for having.
I think he meant crack pipe to
progress.
Yeah.
The intervention that's done has kept people negative around the drug use, around sexuality, around a lot of things. So that is important. We need to maintain that and keep that going, just as much as we should keep the Care Council going. I also want to speak in favor of somebody to moderate, because just in the last 15 minutes, we have bounced from one topic to another, to another, to another, to another, to another, to another, and we need somebody to help keep things focused. Without that focus, it's going to take forever to get the work done. So I want to speak to that. I also want to speak in favor of extending the timeline 1 month, because as we've seen this meeting go, hopefully next meeting a lot of this will be quashed and we can get busy with the work, and that will be that 3 months. So that's all I have to say.
Mark?
A couple things. Well, actually, I just want to say I love what you said, Kenneth. Love that whole aspect. I did two things. The first thing is I do have a slight concern around the extending into the transition team. I think, theoretically, it's a good idea if we're extending it to continue these kinds of dialogues. We're literally understanding each other's cultures, getting to know each other's funding, all those kinds of things. As far as what the transition team, how it was brought to the care side of the unit, was certainly it was under these operating agreements. So the scope of work actually for the transition team is fairly limited. It's really to develop a motion and then define the scope of work of another steering committee. And I'm hoping that won't change because I don't want to go back to the care council and say, now we're now voting on this updated. But I think we could logically extend it if we're simply going to be continuing these kinds of dialogues, which I think we all can recognize are pretty necessary and we have a lot to learn. But that was my little caveat to the idea of extending, as long as it doesn't start now including other things that the joint steering exec actually should have purview over. And the other thing I wanted to add, sort of not to pile on David, this is actually more of a clarifying question, I think, for Tracy and Eileen, because it just might be part of the learning curve. My understanding about who care serves and who prevention serves is actually very different. I can see a lot of commonalities as far as cofactors to becoming positive being things that people who are positive are still dealing with, obviously. And I think some of that's what David and Paul were speaking towards. But my understanding of where prevention funding specifically goes to is, I thought it was fairly straightforward. You get the EPI data. The EPI data describes specifically who is being impacted, and so your funding has to match that. And so the Prevention Council approves that match of funding to the EPI. It's like, make sure that pie chart looks like this pie chart. And so, again, this is, I'm happy to be corrected on this one. So I would assume then that pie chart really shows the focus being on gay white men, because that's where the epidemic actually really is numbers-wise. That's not the care focus necessarily. That's a very key part of the care focus. But, you know, care really focuses on what it considers to be severe need and, quote, special populations. So all these different other communities that might not have all the numbers in the epidemic, care focuses on. And a lot of people who are positive in the city, who I think would make up that prevention pie chart, actually aren't even eligible for care at this point. So that's where my concern was. Are these really the same populations? With the big caveat that I am very much in favor of a merge so we can look at the entire continuum. But I guess when you said that, I just thought, but are they? I mean, and maybe I guess I'm looking for a response, if that makes sense.
We can respond, but we're not in the, it's not our turn.
Yeah. But Tracy, you want to get some of the list.
I'm at the end, so I'll respond at the end. How about that? I have a response.
You want to respond? I can respond. You want to respond?
Let's stick with the list, and then...
Okay. Also, I just wanted to speak on the. There's a lot of friends that I have that are in relationships, one is positive, one is negative. So, if the person that's negative doesn't understand some of what his positive partner is going through, and they've been together 25 years, that's a problem. They should be together. I don't think because it bothered me a lot, and it gave me some issues, and me going back and almost PTSDing me of relationships that I've been in where my partner was positive and died or whatever have you, and I went through the issues that he went through. Of course, bodily, I probably didn't go through the issues that he went through, his medical things that he went through. But I went through it mentally with him. I was up late at night with him, going through what he went through, because I love that person. So I just think when we talk about stuff like that, we really have to look at both sides. And if you are in a relationship, not if you're single now, but if you are in a relationship, a serious relationship, you do go through what your partner is going through.
I have Chip, Stacia, and then Tracy.
Okay, I have a couple things. First, I think this discussion was not only necessary but essential, that we share our concerns and our fears around the merged council. But there's a couple of things that occurred to me that were kind of that I see us sharing. And one is both councils work to decrease community viral load. And that is a commonality of care and prevention. That is the goal. That is our goal. We're committed to a continuum of care that includes everybody. We need to become experts on both. And to that end, I would like to suggest that we do have moderately brief presentations from each council about how we work, where the money goes, and how it's decided. And there seems to be pretty much a consensus that a consultant would be good. I would only make a suggestion that he be, to ensure his impartiality, he not have experience in merging councils.
Question.
I'm not done. Both councils want to preserve the delivery of services to their respective populations, where and if they overlap and where they don't. And finally, the timeline. I would like to see us maybe look at extending the timeline if and when it is necessary and not assume that we're going to need more time at the get-go. That's it for me. Thank you, everybody, for the comments.
Station?
No, I don't think much has been said. No, I don't want to say there's positives here, there's negatives here, and never the two shall meet. Of course not, but I think we have very many more similarities, and they're completely surmountable. You know, they are completely surmountable. We just have to get more comfortable with each other. Maybe you should open the pitching on this next time.
I think first to respond to Mark's question, when we focus on, we have to be really careful of that. That's what got me in trouble. And I often do that with the HIV Prevention Planning Council. You know, there's that we, and then there's the Department of Public Health we. So with HIV prevention, the Planning Council had decided many years ago that when you talk about HIV negative people, that the focus or the resources should be focused on those in the highest prevalence populations. In other words, the priority populations, because that's where HIV is, right? So that's where everything that Mark said, well, not everything, but the populations of the transmission groups that you mentioned, which are gay men and other MSM, trans women, and injection drug users. Race ethnicity, we've never focused on matching the, one-to-one. What we've always said is, as the council is, we should be reaching everyone. And certain groups, even though there are smaller groups of people that are infected, you have to connect because people are, there's disparities. So that's I really want to talk about the disparities just very briefly. And given the priorities, so then the priorities around ensuring that people who are positive are connected to services and supported to stay in services, that's everyone with HIV. That's anyone with HIV. And so within that, and this is where sharing what is funded by the DPH would be helpful. We have special projects, we call them, that one that's focused on reaching African American women, one that's trans women, one that's Latino women, as just an example, so you can sort of see. And those special projects, they have HIV testing, they have prevention with positives and prevention with negatives in them. So it's, and a lot of the funding is in the centers of excellence. We fund HIV prevention with positives in 4 of the COEs, I think, just off the top of my head. Just so as an example, already we're working together. So does that answer your question, Mark? Yeah, thank you. 5. She's correcting me. Dean was saying 5. Thank you. Yeah. And frankly, all that funding is in Dean's contracts. He really manages that, and we, you know, but Dean manages those contracts. HIV Health Services does. So the comment that I had signed up to say is, I think this conversation has been so useful that we should think about how does the joint steering executive committee need to have this conversation. I mean, a lot of it's the same people, right? But just thinking about that in our planning, because our role as a transition team is to think of what does that group need in order for it to move on with the merging of the work. Just how do we want to structure this kind of conversation in that venue, because it's been so valuable.
So it's the end of our list.
Good job.
Can I add an addendum on to Tracy's comment about
just
the historical relationship of the prevention funding and the COEs is something that was negotiated when the HIV Health Services Planning Council created the Centers of Excellence, and recognizing that prevention, specifically prevention of positives, needed to be a part of that. And so negotiated that between the two different sides of the health department to ensure that the prevention dollars from the HPPC could be added to those COEs to make that set of services the set that was needed there. So those are, you know, that's an example of the kind of collaboration that we've actually had. That we've already done, where we're already using the two different sets of money to serve the same.
And I would just add that we're doing this.
Charles.
Let me hear him. I want to hear
him. I would just add that. Thank you, Jones. I would just add that we're doing this already by putting some of our categories for general fund to fund. We are already, with this partnership, and bringing prevention dollars, is just making sure the continuum of care all the way across is then maximized. This is one of the brilliant jobs that I think that Dean and his staff does, is making sure that they can maximize and leverage the dollars, both from an administrative standpoint, which is a nightmare in many ways, but also to make sure programmatically that it makes sense and we can deliver those services. So coordinating all of this, I think, is just going to be an amazing thing, probably make your job a hell of a lot more harder. But with general fund dollars, we're doing this already.
So number 7 is an action vote. Is it proper for me to put a motion on the floor?
Yes.
So,
the problem is we don't have time for discussion of a formal motion right now.
Yeah.
And maybe we should postpone that until our next meeting, so that.
But it was selected to put a motion on the floor, and
we can't. But if there's a motion on the floor, we have to deal with it. We can't just let it dangle.
It's your choice, but if you put a motion on the floor,
is that wearing pajamas for the next meeting?
Unless we're all automatically going to be agreeing or disagreeing, then in some ways you're cutting off the potential for discussion, because we only have 5 minutes left.
So I think it's been discussed already. The motion, just not a motion yet, but just hear me out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's been, I circled the room. I think that the talk about the consultant, I think in agreement that needs to be done. So just think about it, but it's not a motion yet.
I think it was already supposed to be on the agenda for the next meeting to have a formal conversation about it and vote on it. So, I mean, that's already sort of moving forward.
Okay.
So, Chidi's last public comment, or last comments, and then we'll move to the next item.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I really found this process helpful and useful. It cleared a few things up for me. I do want to throw out just for us to think about before the next meeting. We used to have a joint committee, points of integration. And what was, I'm just curious, what were the good things that worked there and what were the bad things that worked there between the two councils? And
maybe we can have a presentation. Maybe it's part of the presentation.
Think about that until next time. And you know, maybe that could be the starting point for.
I just want to say about moving on to the next agenda item and scheduling our next meeting.
Yes, that's what we're going to do. Thank you.
Okay.
So as far as agenda items go, I know that we have at least two agenda items. I think three, actually. One of them being to develop a motion that actually does allow us to eventually merge. The other one, the second one, is consultant, obviously. And I think a third one, which hasn't been mentioned, is a continuation of this discussion around shared culture. And I guess the fourth one would be for us to look at maybe have Dean and Tracy just give us a slide or two on how does funding break down.
Sure.
Can people, I think those are the four agenda items at least discussed in this meeting. Is there anything else that people feel should be on the agenda?
Well, I would like that a little bit of history come with those presentations. We've spoken to some of it today, but in an organized fashion of where we have overlapped in the past, how we have worked together in the past, and especially TJ's asking questions about POI, which was discontinued when, I believe, Dimension restructured itself. Is it about that time?
Probably around that time. I think those are really separate presentations, though, the funding and that, because that's a council thing, and the other thing is a DPH thing.
Got it. Okay.
I think we could talk about people's experiences, because I'm sure they're very different from each other's, during the continuation of the shared culture dialogue. It's certainly falls within that, because that was an example of shared culture.
Okay. Are there any other agenda items? Yes, Frank.
Let me do, I think, when the next one is also a little bit of little discussion or explanation of how the operating procedures a little bit higher level. For instance, some prevention councils don't quite understand. I think you're much more directive and we look to the chairs. And you have a different kind of role, which some prevention council finds unsettling and moving the process versus participatory. But that's your role, and we don't have our division, our council hasn't run that way. We look to the co-chairs and the facilitator of the day. And I think once we understand those nuances and then agree what new nuances to move forward will be, we also may find a easier transition in reaching accords and discussions. It's not a good nor bad, it's just the differences that come in our styles.
Sure, so how would that be an agenda item? That sounds like a very good one, but what would you call that?
I would say it's an agenda item on how we're going to agree to meeting processes above and beyond rules of order and this and that, because we have two different presentation structures, or two different operating structures. That's something, I don't know where you want to put that.
Would that be for this committee or for the joint executive?
I think we're going to need it for both. For this.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So meeting process?
Yeah, meeting process.
Okay. I mean, is that potentially part of just culture? Like, I mean, it is.
Oh, but I think because, I have been jumping in and saying, well, why don't we try to do it this way, which is my role. I'm not the director of council members. I'm the director of council processes. So I think that should be clarified, because maybe this transition team doesn't go by that. Maybe it goes by a different way. Maybe it goes something in the middle. Who knows? So I think that should, if anything, be like the first agenda item, because that's going to
impact the rest. People have a conversation, because then other people who are not stumbling over why is he chipping in, I wonder some of those in. Then we know that, at least for prevention. That's the process may help.
Can we do a doodle for the next meeting time? What?
So that's
sure.
A great idea.
Okay. Then
it's going to be impossible to set it right here. Right?
We'll do a doodle about our next meeting time.
We need to have some hints about what works.
What?
Like, does this kind of time work for people?
Yes.
Thursdays 3 to 5. How about Thursdays 4 to 6? Should we put that in there too?
4 to 6.
Just knowing that the fourth Thursday is the executive committee for our council, because this is the fifth Thursday.
Okay.
So
4 to 6.
4 to 6 better from my perspective.
Okay. So we'll do a 3 to 4 and a 4 to 6 on the third Thursday. Is that what we're doing?
Did you say 3 to 5? Or 3 to 4?
We could do the third.
We vote 4 to 6 or 5.
Well, that's two different options.
We'll choose between them.
So
what time does executive
committee?
Okay, so we have the two. We have
3 to 4
Thursday times. Any other
on
days?
On the fourth Thursday.
Wait, fourth?
Oh, yeah. Oh no, yeah. I was explaining. Okay. Sorry.
So we have two third Tuesday times. Any other time we should put on the doodle?
Third Tuesday or Thursday?
Third Thursday.
Okay. February 19th.
Okay. Unless people feel cool just actually settling on that date, here and
I think the big question might be what the
our
time.
Co-chair's call.
There's something else on
tonight.
Yeah,
it's a call.
Sorry, we've got a couple of council conflicts. We've got steering
yeah.
the next, and then we've also got for other Thursdays. We've got task force doodle out right now.
Can't we just keep it the last Thursday of the month?
No,
or the fourth.
Saturday. You can see the look I just shot you on that. The holiday.
Yeah, I was saying as good as milking me Saturday in my place.
Yes. Yeah,
so
are you cooking?
Mark, we say the second Thursday?
So February 12th.
That was a problem for someone.
Was it?
Is that a problem? Not to know more of. Is there anyone else who has a problem with the second Thursday? Feels terrible.
I have a problem with Laura has a problem.
If it's 4 o'clock on, then I can do it. If it's earlier than that, I have OTCC.
So how about
the
second Thursday from 4 to 6?
That's great.
I'm not making it.
That's two
voting members. So that's not
good. Can I suggest maybe grabbing a calendar of standing meetings of both councils and then looking at some things
that
times
that
work, especially in the afternoon? Does that sound good? Can
we
do a doodle from that?
That sounds great to me.
Okay,
with that, we're adjourned.
Good job, guys.